It's another episode of Society Nine, the Fight Within podcast. My name is Lynn, and I'm the founder of Society Nine. For those of you joining us for the first time, Society Nine is a modern women's sports brand providing boxing gear and sportswear to empower you and your fight. This is actually a special episode because today happens to be Women's Equality Day, and we are incredibly thrilled to have our guests given this special and important day. But let's be real here. It should be every day. We shouldn't need a day to remind us about equality, but alas, here we are, fighting the good fight. Today's special guest is Taylor Rae Almonte. Taylor is a Brooklyn-based actor, athlete, and activist. She's a proud NYU alum, having graduated with honors and a double major in drama and English, as well as American literature. She utilizes her unique skill set to educate, empower, and amplify marginalized voices in all aspects of her life. Her unique brand of fitness activism, combining the mental health benefits of movement with the opportunity to educate and raise funds for social justice organizations, has been sponsored by brands such as Women's Health Magazine, Pop Sugar, Carbon 38, Bala, and more. She has a weekly newsletter, which we highly recommend you sign up for. It's awesome. I read it every single time. Discussing this work along with a new topic every week relevant to fighting systemic oppression. As an actor and model, her select credits include the Broadway National Tour of Motown, the musical, amazing, the film The Dinner, which is now on Netflix, and campaigns for Olay Skincare, Benefit Cosmetics, Cole Haan, and more. Oh, how to take a deep breath, because what an amazing list of accomplishments. We're thrilled to have her. So yeah, welcome, Taylor.
Yay, I'm so excited to be here. And I'm so glad that my bio sounds good when you say it out loud and not just when I read it in my head.
It's, you know what, I get the impression as a highly accomplished person that you probably have moments of like insecurity, self-doubt, imposter syndrome. But then when you always hear someone else say the things you're accomplished, you're like, yeah, I am proud of myself.
No, that's so true. Today, I feel like things always align so well in this world, because today was definitely a big morning where I was feeling that imposter syndrome. So that was nice. That was a nice little reminder.
Yes. If you ever need a hype girl, call me, message me. I got you all day. Taylor, tell us about, I think what's really interesting. So fun fact, I was a theater geek in high school. I was president of the Thespian Society, actually.
Yes, we love it. Me too.
Oh my God.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
Except I don't act anymore, nor can I, clearly. tell us a little bit about your like upbringing. How did you fall into acting? You're Brooklyn based. So yeah, tell us about that background and then how you evolved yourself into the fitness space and how those worlds have come together for you.
For sure. So I grew up in New Jersey. Both of my parents immigrated to the US when they were kids. My mom was born in Puerto Rico, but I don't necessarily consider that part of the US, even though it is basically a colony, but that's a different topic of conversation.
That's another podcast episode.
That's altogether. A different episode. But my mom was born in Puerto Rico. My dad was born in Dominican Republic. They were raised in the Bronx. They knew each other since they were kids. And they raised me in New Jersey to have more space in the suburbs, all that good stuff. For my entire life, I was so resentful that I wasn't raised in New York. I was like, why did you bring me here to these suburbs? Like every time we'd visit New York, I'd be like, these are my people. This is where I should be.
Like New Jersey. Shade to the New Jersey listeners.
And when I was such a true story, but literally always sounds so like a movie when I talk about it. But for my sixth birthday, I saw Beauty and the Beast on Broadway and Toni Braxton was Belle. And it was super, super impactful for me, because as a child, I had a really, really deep, like raspy voice. And people would always call me Toni Braxton because I sang in the church choir when I was little. So that was an element. I always felt a little bit insecure, like my voice isn't as high as the other girls that I'm around. So that was really awesome. And also seeing a Black woman in that role, being, you know, a Disney princess, was so amazing. And after I saw that show, I was walking around with my mom and she brought me downtown to Washington Square Park and we saw a map of NYU. And I was like, oh, what is this? And she was like, oh, this is a school where you can go when you're big and you can learn how to do what we just saw on that stage. You can be an actor and a singer and do what's called musical theater. And I was like, okay, well, that's what I'm going to do. And since I was six, I was just reaching for that goal. I was like, NYU is the only school I applied to. I was like, I'm going there for theater. That's it. This is my path. This is my dream. Thankfully, I got in because I only applied there. Yeah, so acting was like a major part of my life. Sang in the church choir, did all my like community theater, all my school plays, president of drama club, like we were saying, and
drama club. Shout out.
and just always loved the ability to like, I really, really hate just singing in front of people as myself. It makes me super uncomfortable, but I feel like when I'm in this role, it's not about me. It's about what the playwright created. It's about the story that I'm telling, and to like be that vessel to share that message has always just been really important to me, and the way that theater can transform someone. So that was really what drew me to it, and so happy that I went to undergrad for drama in New York, which I always wanted to be in. And then soon after that, after I graduated, I just went like straight into acting. I originally had intentions of going to grad school, but then everyone was like, go try to be an actor, go see what it's like, go give it a shot. Mm. So I was like, all right. So I went out into the world and had some awesome opportunities. My last project, aside from like, you know, local things or smaller things in the city, was the Broadway National Tour of Motown. And amazing. When I returned from that, when I was on tour, I was a swing. So that means I was like covering four different roles and I was basically just on call, even in like the middle of the show. If someone like twisted their ankle, like I now had to be that person. So I could be any of these tracks at any time. And that really inspired me to get into fitness because I was like, I need to be ready. I need to be in like really good shape. I need to be, if I'm doing a dance role tonight, if I'm, you know, running around doing quick changes, like, that's when I really started getting more focused on fitness. And when I returned, I was like, I don't really want to do tours anymore. I kind of just want to, you know, I was already living in Brooklyn. I kind of just wanted to settle in. And that was when I officially started working at a bar studio, then at a spin studio, and then eventually teaching boxing. And that's what I've been doing up until now.
That's amazing. It really resonated to me, or with me, what you said about how with theater, with any play or musical, it's like you are forced to be so empathetic immediately because you're given a character and then you have to connect with that. How would you say that that experience has, you know, morphed into you being an instructor, a leader, you know, kind of like people's keepers in these classes? Because, you know, I think you and I could agree that like the fitness space or like a class is a very therapeutic space. So how has that been translated for you?
For sure. I mean, the less I think about myself, the better I feel I can serve other people. The more I get into my head of like, you know, especially when I first started, am I the best boxer in this room? Should I be instructing this class? Am I capable of doing this? Is my voice annoying? Am I too loud? Am I energetic enough? Or, you know, just asking myself these questions. But as soon as I take the focus off of myself and really just try to kind of what I said about acting, just tell that like higher story and share that higher message, mm-hmm. like fitness should be for everyone and wellness should be for everyone. It shouldn't be a privilege that only certain people get to enjoy and experience. I feel like being in this pandemic and being able to take so many of my classes virtually, especially on Instagram where they can be free. Of course, you need accessibility to have internet and devices and all that stuff. But just really understanding that the best way that I can serve people. And so many times people don't come to class. Yes, we all have our fitness goals. Yes, we all want to get stronger. We all want to get quicker and better at our skills. And that is so important. And I don't minimize that. But most of the time, what people are coming for is to have someone really believe in them and push them and support them and to feel celebrated and successful, even if they don't accomplish, you know, being the fastest or the best in the class necessarily. I don't want my clients thinking about that if they were the best. I just want them to feel, wow, what I did was good, and I am proud of myself for even walking into this room. Mm-hmm. So that's super important to me as an instructor, and I feel like it definitely relates to all of my acting stuff.
Yeah. No, I think that's one of the things that we've loved about following you and watching your workouts and just seeing how you make that translation through the screen. Because, you know, for us, we've always believed too that being well, or like just being active inherently, is a form of like protest as well as empowerment, right? Saying, I deserve to be here. I deserve to do this. It doesn't matter how I look or where I come from, but this is my space. And claiming that space has been something that's really motivated us. So when we came across you and your mission, personal mission as an instructor, as well as just even watching your videos and how they've evolved now, it's like, yes, we are all about this. I wanted to like bring up or re-bring up something that you said about how you saw Toni Braxton and how that, like, that image, like her being on stage, being the lead, how that clearly was such a thread through your life, you know, wanting to become an actor. And then, yes, now it's led to fitness, wellness, accessibility in that space. How are you seeing that now in the fitness space in particular, in terms of accessibility and representation, and where it's weak still, like where it has to go, but also what kind of progress you are seeing, like what hope do you see personally as a woman of color? Just what have you seen?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think for me, the experience of seeing Toni Braxton as Belle is one of the most impactful, I would definitely say, of my life, because I grew up in a predominantly white community and in white spaces, and the musicals that I was watching that I loved, like Sound of Music or even like West Side Story, that it wasn't actually actors that are Puerto Rican in those lead roles. Mm-hmm. And so, or in many of the lead roles. And so I often felt just like not really that I fit into this space, or how could I fit into this space? So that was definitely impactful for me. I think in general, something that I've realized more and more as I've gotten older is that I have been made to feel comfortable more often than maybe other people of color in general. And I am very deliberate when I differentiate between Black people or people of color or Hispanic people, or like exactly who I'm talking about, and really all people of color. I think I have had a relatively easy in some ways experience because I am able-bodied, I am thin, I am attractive and fit into a lot of white beauty standards. And because I also conform to a lot of white beauty standards, something that I've always been super honest about is like my relationship with my hair. And my sister has super long, beautiful hair. And I cried every day of my childhood that I wasn't pretty like her. And I hated my hair to the point that I would just sit and look at myself in the mirror and cry. And my parents were like, okay, my mom never had extensions. My sister didn't have extensions. No one in my family really had the same texture as me. Mm-hmm. And I felt so isolated, but they were like, okay, what do you want? And I was like, I need extensions. And I've worn extensions for 12 years and not been in any public space without them since then. And I think because of that conformity as well, which is something I grapple with all the time, I've been often tokenized or fetishized in these spaces because I am Black, I am mixed race, but I'm also palatable. I'm college educated, I'm middle class, I don't make people necessarily quote unquote uncomfortable because I am, again, palatable. And I think that a lot of representation that we see, it sometimes is difficult because I think a lot of times we take, well, it's a person of color and I'm just going to take it as some sort of representation. But there's so many people that aren't represented, like our trans siblings or people of darker skin tones or people that are that have disabilities, people that are fat, people that are old, that don't have perfect skin at, you know, 60, 70 years old, that, you know, there's just so many demographics that are still not represented. And I think that oftentimes I see people that look more like me that are quote unquote exotic looking. My boyfriend is, or my fiance, I forgot, we got engaged 2 months ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Joy but is important during this time. Yes.
But he is Chinese, Korean, and Puerto Rican. And oftentimes when people see us together, they're like, oh, are you both Asian? Oh, are you this? Oh, he's Puerto Rican. Oh my gosh, you guys are so exotic. You're going to have beautiful children. Like, you're so mixed. Like, you're so this. And it's the fetishization.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. I was like, how do I
fetishization
into a verb of mixed race people that has made me both not comfortable, but has made me accepted and also uncomfortable in a lot of these spaces. And I think we see a lot of that represented now, which is great. And I love to see mixed race people all day. And I love to see people that look like me, but there are so many other people that would love representation as well. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we have quite made it to really showcase the diversity between all people of color.
Yeah.
And all different types of bodies and abilities.
No, thank you for sharing that. First off, congratulations on the engagement.
Thank you.
I think something that I think about when I hear what you're saying is this topic of colorism, right? I mean, you covered a whole gamut from the body ableism as well as colorism. And the colorism piece definitely resonated with me just because, like, as an Asian American woman, like, I'm Vietnamese. And something I've talked about openly on podcasts in the past is this weird space of palatability that we live on, right? And I relate with you hard on that because I sometimes struggle in conversations when it comes to skin color because I am palatable in my own way, in my existence and appearance, at least in the framework of what's acceptable or comfortable in conversations around racism, right? But then also I'm inherently not equal, whether it's from pay or how I'm viewed or how I'm treated, you know, on the subject of fetishization or exoticism. So mm-hmm. for you, like, now writing this next chapter of your career, because, you know, you've had some really exciting things branching out from just being a fitness, I don't want to say just, from being a fitness instructor. Yeah. You've had new opportunities evolve out of that. What can you share with us of how you've matched this activism platform and where there is an opportunity to have those conversations in fitness? Because it is an important conversation because we're talking about people's collective humanity, right? And sharing the space together. But then also there's a very, like when you're talking about a fitness class or you're talking about, I'm here to just do the workout. But really, it's so much deeper than that. Like, how have you found that Venn diagram, you know, pulling those two worlds together? Where are you seeing it evolve for you?
For sure. Touching a little bit on what you were saying about colorism, I think kind of like in the first moments of me stepping into really incorporating that work into my fitness, I was thinking a lot about, should I be the voice that is speaking on these things? Mm. And do I have the right to speak about these things? And am I what's needed? And I kind of resolved that, like, there's a Barack Obama quote that I honestly live by at this point. It's my wallpaper, it's in all of my newsletters, and it's, we are the ones we've been waiting for. We are the change we seek. Mm. And I just think that, like, if it's not me, who's it gonna be? And until someone tells me, hey, in this space, we actually have someone else that, you know, maybe has different abilities than me, or, you know, a different skin tone or different experiences that might be, you know, that is better suited to take up space right now, I am 100% so open to relinquishing that space for them at any and all times. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to step up and do my part with what I can do. So that was kind of the first big step for me. In deciding to incorporate this work into my fitness. essentially I realized that I, yes, I have a college education. I do consider myself someone that is more educated than maybe the everyday person on race relations in America. But I also realize that, like, I'm not going to write a book right now. I'm not going to start doing lectures. Like, there's just areas that there are people that know so much more and that should be, you know, celebrated for being qualified in that work. But what can I do? Well, I teach fitness classes and I got a lot of people that watch them. So how can I make that my platform? And what I tell everyone is, like, start where you are. Like, whatever industry you're in, whatever thing you do, just do that and make it work. Like, fit it in somehow to being able to make the world a better place. So pretty immediately, I started raising money for different organizations, specifically ones that help people that are incarcerated and the trans community. Those are two communities that were very important to me and that I wanted to really focus on raising money for. And then I realized this seems a little bit too easy because, again, people can just come up, show up and do the workout, and they just maybe give a couple of dollars or, you know, a company matches donations and they're not really thinking about it. And that didn't sit well with me. What I wanted to do is actually create a dialogue and a conversation. So I started talking about different facets of racism, then eventually started creating my newsletter where I talk about a different facet of racism every week. And just kind of starting that conversation. And I noticed people are very hesitant to, like, ask questions or really engage in a conversation. But I'll have people, like, vote, like, should I talk about environmental racism or should I talk about the prison industrial complex? And kind of just, like, getting people engaged that way. But I also really wanted to create a space with my newsletter where speaking about race can be very difficult. I remember my first conversation that I had with one of my really close friends who's white it was maybe the day after George Floyd was murdered. And I was shaking the whole time and I couldn't put into words the feelings that I was having. And I felt so, like, chaotic the rest of the day and just, like, disconnected from my body. And I think about that now and realize that because I now have the language to be able to explain the concepts and the experiences that I've had, I can now engage in these conversations without feeling afraid or feeling we're all going to say the wrong thing. We're all going to have to keep learning. That's just a given. But at least now I have so much more language to express these feelings and these ideas. So I kind of wanted to be able to share that with other people because we're all learning. I think you could be a Black person and be learning. You could be a person of color that's not Black. You could be a white person. You could be of, you know, any way you identify, we're always learning. And I felt like, okay, this is really helping me be able to put it into words and to make connections. So hopefully I can help do that for other people, help them make connections and be able to put into words what's happening and what's happened.
Yeah. I mean, thank you for sharing your vulnerability. I think there's, like, a lot of generational trauma that's trying to be broken by everyone, including white people, right? It's like, and that's not me saying that I have sympathy for one group over another. It's just stating everyone is breaking wheels of generational trauma. And, like, I'm even seeing it myself, like, as a daughter of Vietnam War refugees, like, same thing, right? There's in the Vietnamese community, there's struggles around their own racism towards Black communities. And that's something as a first generation American, I've had to grapple and reconcile, like, oh my gosh, these are my people. Why are they saying these things, you know? And so I was shaking in a different way in that, like, my own people, and I'm generalizing, I'm not saying all Vietnamese people, of course, but it's like, how could you not be shaking and seeing fellow humans be treated this way when, you know, we came from war? I mean, there's no worse. I mean, this is war being committed against its own people in America, right? So, so yeah, I can't even imagine, like, what it would feel like, as you said, you know, the day after George Floyd was murdered, that shake, you know. So for you, it's a day at a time, I would imagine, but also, like, what are you doing for yourself? You know, I feel like self-care is, I keep seeing this quote on Instagram. You might have seen it, like, all over the place in different beautiful graphics, as Instagram does, the world of Instagram does. But I keep seeing this quote that, you know, self-care is a form of protest too. So for you, especially because being a fitness instructor, it so much is demanded of you in terms of an energy, a persona, inspiration. And then also to talk about these topics, understandably, as a woman of color, there's a lot of trauma there too, to keep on rehashing it or to educate other people. So what are you doing for yourself? Because that's just as important in this protest, right?
Yeah, for sure. I feel like it's kind of two major things. The first is I started to really differentiate when am I doing this work? So when am I either like reading about it, watching documentaries about it, writing about it, speaking about it, thinking about it, posting on social about it? When am I doing that? Because at first it was all the time. And I had this deep, this feeling of who am I to take a break from it? I don't get to take a break because there's other people that are suffering in this world and I don't get to take a break. I must continue to consume this information, to give all of myself to eradicating the world of racism in every day. And it just wasn't sustainable. And I was just in a really terrible place after like a week or 2 weeks, because I was not making that delineation. I felt extreme guilt of like, who am I to be able to take a break and to step away from this when other people do not get to. If someone is in prison right now, they don't get to step away from this. How can I not continue to like raise money for bail funds and things like that, which was an organization I was working with at the time. And so what I really started working on was, okay, when I'm sitting at this table and I have done these other things, I've had breakfast, I have had time for myself, maybe I've taught a class. When I sit at this table, that is the time I will do this. When I put my computer away, that is when I am not doing this. And I will bookmark things I see on social media, and I will write down things to look up tomorrow, because there is always another day where I will, this is going to be for the rest of my life. So tomorrow I will pick this up again. So that was super important for me. Just starting to make that delineation between when I was having time to just like be myself and have thoughts of like, you know, oh, I want ice cream today, like some random thoughts, or when I'm going to be very much invested in this work and doing the most that I can. And even if it's not necessarily quote unquote working, even if it's just like reading the news, like I need to be prepared for this. Like I can't just be like, whatever, I'm going to read the news today. Like, no, that's like not how it works anymore. So making that differentiation. And then the second thing is, I've been going to therapy for 5 years. I love therapy so much. I had therapy earlier today. I have made it virtual now that, you know, I can't be in the office, but therapy is one of the most important and meaningful things in my life. And I advocate for therapy so much all the time. Love therapy. And having just like that space to unload how I'm feeling, because sometimes I can't unload it on my partner or my mom or, you know, my sister or my friends. Like sometimes it's just not, either they can't give me what I need or they are also human beings going through their own thing. And my therapist is obviously a human being, but he's trained to be able to take on everything I need to unload. So that's really important. And then just, you know, making a list of my tools. That my mom always calls it my toolbox. When I call her and I'm like, I'm falling apart, she's like, what's in your toolbox? You can do this, you can do this, whether it's like journaling or it's watching like, you know, a show that I love, or it's like literally the best advice I've ever gotten is just be it. Like sometimes you just feel like trash because you're a human being and you're just existing. Like there's nothing to do. There's no reason. you just are. And sometimes you just sit on the couch and you're like, I'm a human and I'm having feelings today. And kind of all of those pieces together, that's how I self-care. Sometimes it does look like it does on Instagram with like a face mask or like getting my nails done. But most of the time it's just sitting on the couch being like, I feel like garbage and that's fine. I'm just gonna exist right here. And that to me is really self-care.
Yeah. No, I nodded at so many of your ideas and your practices because it resonates with me so much as like a business owner. Like initially it was COVID and then also making sure that we didn't lose sight of what's important as a business, which is empathy, not just for our customers, but for our community, given everything that's going on, and how to make sure that that empathy is forever and sustainable, and also the advocacy, right? And I feel like your point about therapy, I was like trying so hard not to like snap and be like, yes, everyone get therapy. Cause I feel you. I've been in therapy myself for the last couple of years, and it's been able to give me such a sense of peace and self-forgiveness. I feel like so much of the negativity or anger that any person projects is it's because it's like internalized anger towards yourself, or like hatred or just whatever, right? But just the negative energy is projected out because like you haven't processed that for yourself. So I totally feel that so much. Like I scheduled, because of my own stuff, I scheduled like an emergency therapy session this week, and I'm like so excited. I've never been so excited for something in my life. So I totally get that. And the couch thing, listen, everyone, that's a mental workout right there. Just sitting on the couch and being in your feelings and your thoughts. Like I highly endorse the activity too, because there are times where literally I'll just sit on the couch and shove my face into the cushions and just like do that for an hour with maybe some music. And it just feels so good to be still, because with fitness, I have other friends as well as like obviously peers being in the Society9 space or whatever, who when you're so on, being a fitness instructor, you're on all the time. So like, do you have specific workouts or practices that are, you know, maybe non-boxing or maybe non-stereotypical, quote unquote, for fitness instructor? What are some active practices that you like to do that maybe people wouldn't expect as a fitness instructor that gives you a sense of peace? I mean, you mentioned therapy, but what are other quiet things that you do?
Something that I really started doing in this time over the last few months is like, so I've always said, oh, I hate yoga. And I think sometimes
I've said that too.
Like, I think that sometimes just like human beings, we say things, we keep saying them, we believe them so much, and like, why? Like, it's just like the randomest things, like, oh my God, I could never eat that, or like, oh, I hate that artist. Like, but why? And like, there's so many things that you just say so many times. Like, growing up, I never drank water because I just was like, why would I drink water when I could drink like orange juice, or like apple juice was always my jam. Like my water bottles would be filled with apple juice as a kid because I was like, water is gross. And I said for 26 years, oh, I hate water, I don't drink water. Like, you're a human. What? So I just started realizing, I was like, okay, I say a lot of things that are just like, why? So I'd always be like, I hate yoga. I just can't get into it. Like, I just hate yoga.
Then
I
find so many people. Yeah, said the same thing.
Yes. And I find so many people that were like, oh my God, same. I too hate yoga. And I was like, yeah. And so that, like, over this time, I haven't necessarily started like a big yoga practice. I don't like do any sort of classes, but I'll just put my mat out and just like move my body around in random shapes. And I'm just like, this is awesome. Sometimes that is it. That is my workout for the day. That is it. I moved my body. The end. Like, I don't really need to do a HIIT class or jump rope or shadow box. Like, I'm just gonna move my body around in this like yoga inspired flow. And that's something that's been really awesome for me. Just not putting pressure on like, how many calories did I burn? How much did I sweat? Did I work out for an hour? you know, just these arbitrary goals that don't necessarily make me feel better, but that I think I'm supposed to do. So my just like random mat movements is something that I've really incorporated into my life. I'm trying to think what else. Honestly, it's so funny because I was just talking about this in therapy today, but I feel like a lot of things that I do are like, I see recommendations on like Instagram or a blog or like on TV for like, if you do this, it will bring you peace. And then I'll be like, cool. So from now on, every day I'm doing this gratitude journal. Every day I'm now meditating. Every day I'm now reading this book because it's supposed to bring me peace. And it just becomes a chore. And the whole time I'm like, why
am I not peaceful? Give me peace. Why is this not giving me peace? Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm just like, am I peaceful? I'm reading this book. Do I feel peace? Maybe if I keep reading it, I'm going to be peaceful. And then I miss a day reading it. And I'm like, this is why you're not peaceful, Taylor, because you didn't read the book. And I'm like, I'm so exhausted. I'm just going to like not try to do that to myself. Especially now when there's like so little structure in the world, I think I'm trying to make structure just like doing things that aren't helpful. I probably have a million things I could recommend that I've tried, but none that really made me feel as good as just random things might. I feel like every day you kind of just have to accept yourself where you're at. And some days something might feel awesome. Some days I love an iced coffee when I wake up. Some days I like can't imagine having coffee. Like, you know, I think we can be different every day and do what makes us feel good. And that's way easier said than done because I love a routine. But that's what I'm trying to do now.
Yeah. I'm just laughing at that. Like, why is this not giving me peace? I totally get that. Because, I mean, listen, your girl loves a self-help recommendation. I'll try it. I'll try anything once, other than drugs, of course. I've totally caught myself being a victim of the wonderful Instagram ads. They're just like, this will totally help you right now. Because time is this weird nebulous concept right now. I mean, it's always been. We just like enforce routine, like you said. Mm-hmm. And then you break the routine and you're like, no peace. the yoga thing I totally relate to also, because you're saying all these things today, Taylor. I'm like, yes, I felt all these things. The yoga thing, I 100%, like a year ago, I was like, yoga's dumb. Why would I do that? Like, it just gives me no satisfaction ever. And then the initial stay at home order, I was like, so exhausted because we had our own sort of emergency things we had to deal with as like a small business. And I could not even get myself to like process a workout. Even if someone like you was teaching it to me so step-by-step, I couldn't even like take instruction. So I started just doing stretches, like you were saying, like yoga inspired, air quotes, not certified. And it like gave me such peace, just like feeling like I was moving but being in my own space. So like I second what Taylor said, y'all do it, just stretch, just move, and that is all you need. It really is, because you know we get stuck in that, especially being in the boxing fitness space. It's so easy to fall into be intense, push it all the time, and then you forget like, oh, mm-hmm. actually it's okay to be quiet and just chill. So yeah, so I want to respect your time today because I know your schedule with teaching all that stuff is crazy. For people who are listening, what would you say as like, we've talked about a lot of important things about wellness, accessibility, but also humanity and racism. What would you ask of our audience if they're going to take 3 actions today to make a step towards progress, both either in the self, but I would actually argue and say that like actions towards getting rid of racism, breaking down systemic racism, as well as moving towards a greater social justice for people. What are 3 tangible things or ways you would recommend to our listeners that they take so that we progress forward as a community?
For sure. So I think like the number one thing for me that I constantly say is just take a moment within yourself and just find the thing that's in there that maybe you would never tell anyone, like a belief that you have or a thought that you have that maybe you feel just like super ashamed or guilty or embarrassed or that you dislike, or maybe that you're just curious about, right? Maybe it doesn't even have a negative connotation, but just like something within you. For me, it manifested itself when I was, you know, me and Richard, we just got engaged. We were talking about, we know we want to have kids someday. And I thought about, what if my kid was born with X, Y, or Z, you know, in X, Y, or Z way, or experience the world in this way. And I was like, I wouldn't want that for my kid. And then I realized, well, what does that say about me? If I do not want this for my child, yet I can say, oh yeah, but that's great, I celebrate everyone. Well, how can I celebrate everyone if I wouldn't celebrate it in my child? That's a really, I literally have chills right now because I was like, that's a really ugly thing in me. I don't want to feel this way. And like, we all have these implicit biases. We all have these learned beliefs. And my favorite thing to do is say, well, I was raised and born in a, you know, white supremacist patriarchal society of capitalism that taught me these things. And you don't have to like hate yourself. You can say, okay, well, this is what I was conditioned to believe and I'm choosing something different. You don't have to harp on because you believe something that's ugly. You can just, I think it's amazing to say, ooh, okay, wow, that's really bad. Yeah, I think that. Okay, let me look more into that. So I feel like that's something super important. Make it really personal. If it wasn't just like an imaginary person out there, would you be able to really love and support someone that was different than you in some way? So I feel like that's the first thing that is very difficult and alarming, because we all like to think that we're like kind, you know, people that support other humans, but you might be surprised at the learned beliefs that you have. I think the second thing would be challenge yourself to just believe someone at their word. So if someone tells you about an experience that they've had, instead of being like, well, why? Well, tell me more. Well, what are the statistics on that? Well, how does that work? Well, what's the correct terminology, or like, what does that mean? Instead of requiring that additional emotional labor from like another human, even if it's just on TV, you know, it could be a friend, but it could be on TV or a podcast or something you read, and just like believe someone. If someone tells you something is really difficult or that something is unequal in a certain way, to just believe them and take it in and just sit with that. Okay, this is the truth. It might not be my truth or my lived experience, but that doesn't make it any less true. And being able to like understand that many beliefs can exist at the same time. And it's really important to believe people, especially marginalized groups, and accept what they have to say and not make them prove and defend their humanity. And then I think the third thing would be to find something really specific that you want to learn more about. So for me, it started with the prison industrial complex. I was so curious as to why are our prisons like this? Why do we have 4% of the world's population and 13% of the incarcerated people in the entire planet? Like, what's that about? Why is one in four Black men going to go to prison and one in 17 white men? Like, why are these statistics true? And making it really specific has allowed me to find organizations that I support, people that I listen to, books to read, things to follow that are really nuanced on a certain facet of racism. If you just Google racism, you're gonna find a lot of things. Right. You're gonna find too many things to learn. But find a facet that is important to you. Is it about the intersection between LGBTQ plus communities and racism? Is it about, you know, financial inequality? Is it about sure, slavery, if you want to start at the root in America, is it about, you know, redlining? Is it about allyship? Is it, oh, there's so many things, all the newsletter topics that I will forever be writing. So find a facet and really dig into that. And then when you feel like you know, I mean, you're never going to know everything, but when you feel like you know a lot, then find a new one. Yeah. Forever.
Yeah. I'm like mentally putting these down in my head too, because it has felt like drinking from a fire hose, but it's like a fire hose I want to drink from, right? Because of that, like, I want things to change and I understand that, like, I am a critical part of that. But same thing, it's like, okay, how do I make this tangible and digestible? Because drinking from a fire hose can also drown you. So it's like, okay, how do I make sure I keep drinking the water every single day? You know, so those are awesome tips. If y'all are listening, write that shit down. Come on. I can't thank you enough for your time, as well as like sharing some of your vulnerabilities of your lived experiences so that people can see too. Cause I often find with the wellness industry, it's a tricky line because it's our job, like on our end as a brand, on your end as a personal brand, like as an instructor and a leader in the fitness space, it's like, it's our job to create a certain narrative around hope and power and optimism. Mm-hmm. But it's like, okay, hope, power, and optimism are incredibly important. But on the other side of that is like pain. It's suffering. Because you can't feel those things, the hope, power, and optimism, if you don't feel those other things. So like, I really appreciate you sharing so much of that duality and perspective today with us and how you can find like a middle and have it not feel fraudulent or forced or whatever, but that is the human experience. So thank you so much. Can you let our audience know where to follow you, where to sign up for your newsletter, all that good stuff? Because you all need to do that right now.
Yeah, for sure. On Instagram, that's pretty much the only social media I really use. Just my full name, Taylor Almonte. And then either the link on my Instagram or my website, TaylorAlmonte.com. You can sign up for my newsletter. And and it's in a blog form now, so people can comment on it and engage with it. No one's really been, only a few people have, but I understand it's, like I said, it's hard to talk about racism. Sometimes we don't want to like put ourselves out there and be like, hi, like, I don't really understand. Or like, can we talk more about this?
Yeah.
But if you do subscribe, don't be afraid to engage with the
newsletters. Jump in the pool, Taylor. Jump into the pool. I'll make sure to do that.
Yeah. It's, we're all learning. And yeah, so that's where folks can stay connected with me.
We will also, listeners will also make sure to put those links into the episode details. So if you didn't get a chance to write down quick enough, it will be there for you so that you can follow her and join in the conversation. So yeah, thank you, Taylor.
Thank you.